Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
And we have Zach Zaman in for Mully today. I'm David Hall. We're also going to hear the voices of Chris Dickens, Adam Studzinski. I can say that. And Mike Esposito, Espo, is filling in today as well. So 5 of 5, let's go at it.
What was the highlight of All-Star Weekend for you? The Saturday night dunk contest and three-point contest? The touching pregame tributes that turned into a commercial for Chicago, or the game itself?
Well, as I said, I think that the Bulls could put together a free agent video and not have as powerful of a presentation as what we saw before the game on behalf of the city. I mean, Chicago, take a bow. Bravo. That was terrific. That was eloquent. It was touching. It was all these things, powerful, poignant, all the words you can use to describe what it was. And I felt like, boy, after hearing Jennifer Hudson sing and after hearing Common and with his lyrical poetry, I didn't think the game could live up to the pregame. And I'm not sure that it did, but boy, did it come close. And I like the fact that the game was as competitive as the pregame was compelling. And that's hard to expect, especially when you're talking about an exhibition. And when you're talking about an exhibition, you just don't know what you're going to have in the way of everybody buying in and investing their time and their energy and what makes them special, the talent. And what you saw over the weekend was this incredible display of talent and this collection of skilled people doing what they love to do and doing it at the highest level. And everybody was thrilled to be here, from President Obama to every Chance the Rapper. Dwayne Wade even was wiping a tear away when he was honored in the pregame. So I don't know that there was anything really to look at and say, oh boy, that was cringeworthy, except for maybe the exception. I'm going to say this, Chaka Khan, the anthem was not great. That was the only thing I looked at, like, okay, was that, you know, a regrettable experience? It wasn't for everybody, all right? But I don't think it soiled or ruined anything. This was a moment that people will look back at from the NBA perspective and the league office and say, that's the model for future All-Star game weekends. That is what we need to duplicate next year in Indianapolis, which has a tough act to follow. So I don't know that I can pick just one, but if I did have to pick just one, it would be that 30 minutes before tip-off when everybody's eyes and everybody's ears and everybody's heart was touched and by what we heard and what we saw and really what you felt. And you felt the weekend more than anything, and I think that was what's going to make this one of the more memorable All-Star weekends ever.
Common's words were from the heart. They were genuine, and it created a beautiful celebration of the city of Chicago. And the reason that Dwayne Wade looked emotional and had the tears coming down his eyes during that lyrical poem of Common's is that if you're from here, you get it. And if you're not from here, now you understand. And that's what was so special about pregame. But the highlight, the game itself. Not only was it transformative in terms of changing the NBA All-Star game as we know it, every other major sports league in North America is now going to look at what has transpired in the NBA and look to tweak what they do to try and make their games as competitive as what we saw in that fourth quarter last night. The NBA raised the bar because you can have a little bit of fun, a little bit of showboating, a little bit of hot dogging, but have what appears to be real, true competition. And that's what made the weekend awesome. The fourth quarter was the exclamation point to a phenomenal weekend. That was the highlight of All-Star Weekend for me.
I mentioned to David off the air in the booth just a minute ago, I was so pleasantly surprised by how great this All-Star weekend was. The slam dunk contest was fantastic. Aaron Gordon, you got robbed, my friend. Although, I mean, come on. It was a great. The last two guys, you should have split that right down the middle. Yeah. I think that would have been the fairest. But Commons, I don't know, what do you call it? Lyrical poetry, whatever that was, however you want to phrase it, that was beautiful. He worked all of our Chicago basketball icons in there. He got Ben Wilson in there. I mean, it was just a fantastic presentation.
And Espo, you mentioned Ben Wilson. Did you hear LeBron James after the game pay some respect to Ben Wilson?
I saw that on Twitter. I did not hear it live, but that's just amazing. I mean, I guess it just goes to show how important he was to Chicago basketball. And I know I was, 12 when that happened, and I remember it vividly. I mean, as somebody who followed basketball very closely, the Ben Wilson story certainly lives on here in Chicago. But I was also pleasantly surprised too by the game. I mean, and we jokingly tried to figure out the math behind the final period earlier last week, but it actually worked. I mean, it made sense as you're going there watching it happen, and I thought it was great because you give the guys something to play for, they're going to play for it. And to Zach's point about other leagues taking off and using some of what the NBA has done, I sincerely hope so, because the Pro Bowl is a joke. MLB's All-Star Game, which I used to love as a kid, has lost some of that competitiveness, and it would be awesome to see some of that. But all in all, Chicago, round of applause. Fantastic job.
It was a great All-Star Weekend in general. Normally, I go dunk contest, three-point contest, skills challenge. All-Star Saturday night is my favorite part of the weekend, and it lived up to it yet again. But this game was on another level when it comes to an All-Star game for NBA. It brought my attention back to it. There was defense being played in the fourth quarter. How long were they stuck at, 41-39?
I know!
It was
forever!
Forever! And you saw defense getting played and them hitting clutch shots, and you got hooked into it. Not to mention the pregame tributes with everything as well. But for me, it was the play, and it had to be the All-Star game itself. That was my highlight of this weekend.
And you know what? It was so good. It was almost like, not that it ticked you off, but you're waiting to, from our standpoint, to go to bed. You can't go to bed because you can't turn it off.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, you couldn't turn it off, and you couldn't look away. And normally, because you watch the All-Star game, you're like, hey, it's the third quarter. It's 170-165. I'm turning it off. Let's go to bed. And you're like, I got to see who wins this.
Yeah, that's the one complaint I would have. I was just like, I know I got to go to bed here. I got to get up in 5 hours. But okay, I'll let that go because the game was awesome. I am a critic of every All-Star game in every league. And this is the first time I've been legitimately hooked into an All-Star game for any league in years. That in itself is a win for the NBA because I'm not the biggest NBA fan, but I was like, oh, this is great. You got the Giannis block on LeBron that they had to review to get. That was awesome. And the whole, my heart was actually racing a little bit. Like, oh, who's going to get to this? Who's going to get to this point? Because LeBron's putting up threes from half court to try to win it. It's like, this is crazy. I will say it was kind of weird that at the end of the third quarter, they were tied. They didn't just split the money between the two charities. Like, I figured that would be, instead of $100,000 going to one charity, why not just give them
to both? I thought they might do that too. It almost seemed like those poor kids, they're watching and then they're crushed. Oh gosh.
I mean, come on. Shouldn't the goal be to give away as much money as possible? So I think hopefully they change that. But otherwise.
Yeah. You wonder about that because I think one charity made out with $300,000. The other one got $100,000.
Which is still a lot of money.
It's a lot of dough.
But that's the only complaint I had. The game itself, I think, was a win overall for the NBA and the city of Chicago.
That's a pretty easy question to answer.
What will be the impact of Chris Bryant's honest and revealing 35-minute press conference Saturday when he reported to Arizona? Can anything Bryant says affect how differently the Cubs act in regard to his short or long-term future?
I don't think anything Chris Bryant said yesterday will impact the way Theo Epstein thinks in terms of how he wants to construct his ball club. I think what it did publicly is remind you of why you love Chris Bryant so much. Not just because he's a phenomenal MVP caliber player who, when healthy, can carry this team by himself to another level, but he also does things the right way, which is, in this sports landscape, you don't often have the combination of those two things. The tough part for the Cubs going forward is this, and you saw the Red Sox kind of have to deal with it with Mookie Betts. To me, the best comparison I can give you is look at the Seattle Seahawks in the NFL. Because do you go out and pay Chris Bryant the big money that it would take to keep him at the expense of being able to fill out the rest of your team? You know, for example, the Seahawks, and rightfully so, went out and paid Russell Wilson. And they're still good. And they're going to be good year in, year out, as long as Russell Wilson is their quarterback. But they're no longer that team that's able to win the Super Bowl based on the landscape of the NFL. And I think if you go out and you pay Chris Bryant, does that cost you the ability to fill in some of the other weaknesses of your team where you're able to do the things that Chris Bryant did early on in his career, which is give you the ability to win the championship? That's what you're wrestling with.
How do you win in any sport? How do you win with stars?
I think what has to happen, and this is part of my problem with baseball, and I think eventually this will change. In the new collective bargaining agreement, you have to reward teams that do the job the Cubs did of building the team from within. See, because what happens now
they
around...
They did and they didn't. We'll get into this later. They did and they didn't. There's no pitching.
What happens around Major League Baseball is if you develop stars, and the Cubs didn't develop just one star. They developed stars. They developed a roster full of stars. They can't keep all of them right now. And why should you be penalized for developing someone who became a superstar, and now you have to pay him to the point where you can't flush out the rest of your roster?
Okay. All right. Chris Bryant proved Saturday why he is the consummate professional, a player with perspective who actually gets it. He represents everything, it bears repeating, that Theo said he was going to bring to Chicago, a prospect he drafted, developed, won a World Series with, and should be kept to sustain success that was promised when he came in October 2011. Chicago would miss and the Cubs would regret trading Chris Bryant. I get all of the realities you point out and you state very well. And that the NFL argument is a good one. You've got two more years of control for Chris Bryant. You've got two more years to actually negotiate a contract that if you want to negotiate a contract to decide whether or not you keep him or Javi Baez. I would said this before. If you made the argument, you're going to go for it to try to win a championship in those 2 years and then worry about what happens next, I would be all in favor for that. What Chris Bryant did on Saturday was speak in a way that shows you how far he has come and how much he has grown. Was it a plea for help or for common sense? You wonder about that. When you look at him, I don't know that there's been a better, to me, okay? I don't know that there's been a better ambassador for Chicago sports in the last decade or so than Chris Bryant. I mean, he is everything that you want in a superstar. He's in a franchise player. He is image-wise, production-wise. Now, it's dipped because of health, but the commitment is there. And I think that when you look at the way health has contributed to the decline in production, it makes you wonder if, once he's healthy, what he's going to do again. So to me, the Cubs would be wise to hear what he has to say, get him alone. Here, you have an audience with him, make some concessions, be as committed to being open-minded to working on a deal as you are to trading him.
What gives the Cubs the best chance going forward for long-term success? Is it paying Chris Bryant and having to adjust around him now because every team's got a budget, right? Or is it trading Chris Bryant and being able to restock without having to go through 4 or 5 consecutive losing seasons in order to rebuild the team? For example, the Yankees, the year the Cubs won the championship, you didn't notice it at the time, but the Yankees were retooling where they didn't have to go through this long rebuilding period. And they, if you can end up getting, again, you've got one of the best executives in the history of professional sports in this country as the point man for this. What would happen if he can come up with not just prospects. I'm talking about the kind of talent where they're major league ready and you take your team to the next level because of it.
Let the seller beware.
Yeah, it's a great debate. And I think, Zach, you hit it on the head when you said that, you know, the Cubs because of that tax threshold, and it's a de facto salary cap, they went over it once. They don't want to go over it twice. They don't want to pay the draft pick compensation. I don't think it's the money. I think it's the we need to keep our controllable or our spendable dollars under this threshold. And Chris Bryant and Javi Baez and Anthony Rizzo and Wilson Contreras and Kyle Schwarber and all the other guys, you know, that we know that the Cubs have developed, plus the guys you're paying like Jason Hayward, like Yu Darvish, like John Lester, although this is likely the last year for Lester. You got a lot of dollars committed to those guys that I just mentioned there. And I think the Bryant thing proved, and we talked about it Friday when we asked, what do you think Chris Bryant's going to have to say? It's exactly what we saw. Is that not right? I mean, David, I think that's exactly what a lot of us expected to see from Chris Bryant is pure class. I think he spoke very frankly on a lot of subjects, including the Astros, but including a lot of the different Cubs things as well. I think Chris Bryant is good for baseball. He is good for the Cubs. He's done nothing since he's been here but produce and help the Cubs win a World Series. I am not going to sit here and say I don't think he's still not going to be traded. I think he will eventually be traded, but I don't think you have a problem if Chris Bryant is on your roster. The dollars thing notwithstanding, the tax thing notwithstanding, Chris Bryant as a baseball player on your roster is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs need to find a way to keep Chris Bryant on the roster. It's plain and simple. That press conference was the most transparent, the most honest. That's the epitome of what you want a press conference to be from any professional athlete. That's what you want to hear, is them telling you the truth, what they believe, what they've seen, what they hear, everything they know. And it does this affect his long or short-term future? I don't know, and I don't think the Cubs know. I don't think they know what his long or short-term future is right now. We hear so many conflicting reports. You heard reports that he turned down an extension. He comes out and says he never was offered an extension. You hear that they are looking to trade him. He says he turned off his Twitter and he didn't want to hear anything about it. There are so many things going on in that organization that I think they are just trying to figure out how to get under the tax threshold right now rather than figure out what exactly their next step is with Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. It's going to be a wait and see thing with Chris Bryant. And first of all, I got to agree with you guys. That was such a great press conference by him. I loved how he didn't back down on his St. Louis is boring comment. That was great. but yeah, the shorter long-term future, I mean, I got to think that the Cubs will eventually offer him an extension. And the question is going to be, how much does he value playing in Chicago versus how much does he value what he's worth? Because if he values the money a little bit more, I don't know if they're going to be able to offer more than another team that isn't as close to the luxury tax cap.
You're not going to tell us what to write?
No. Yeah. Honestly, if you have other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I've been happy to answer the whole time.
When Javi Baez blamed the Cubs' lax pregame routine last year for some of the team's early struggles, who do you hold most responsible for that, Joe Maddon or the players? Can David Ross get more out of the players than Joe Maddon apparently could?
Everybody loves Javi. There's a lot to like there, and I like the fact that he's in camp, and I like the fact he's talking openly, and I like everything about Javi Baez, but this is a little bit hard to swallow. I think the Cubs would want everyone to believe, and maybe they have created this sort of culture where all of that happened last year that didn't go the Cubs' way. It was Joe Maddon's fault for allowing his professionals to be professional and trusting his men to act like men. And giving these guys a little bit of rope so that they could hang themselves. I mean, this is not what you want to hear, is that Joe is an easy scapegoat right now. He's the guy that obviously the Cubs have put in a position. Nothing has changed except the manager, and they want David Ross to come in there like the football coach and whip everybody into shape and say, you're going to be here at this time, and we're going to do mandatory this and required that. And I get it, and maybe that is the case, and certainly that is the tenor of the spring training regimen that is the Cubs are reporting to today for the first full squad workout. But come on, you couldn't get loose for the first four innings because you were allowed to hit indoors. This is on the players. This is on the professionals making millions of dollars to be good at what they do. And this is part of the, you know, where is that line? And apparently a lot of Cubs veterans crossed it between trusting people and treating them like adults and professionals, and, you know, players who took advantage of that. And it sounds like Javi Baez was one of several players on the Cubs team last year that took advantage of that. So I was disappointed more in the players that Javi Baez, I think, indicted than I was in Joe Maddon, because the greatest strength about Joe Maddon was the fact that he created this atmosphere that was very open and loose and relaxed. Now it's his biggest weakness too. Okay, I could see that after time. You could go in that direction, but I don't know that you want to continue to hear this veiled criticism of a guy who was, you know, overall, he won a lot of games, he won a World Series, and he left a legend. So I was a little disappointed by this, Zach.
I think it's a lot of talk, and I don't think anyone really knows the answer, because to me, the last 2 years, the issue with the Cubs hasn't been the way they start. It's the way they finish, or the lack thereof. A collapse in September when they were in first place in 2018, and we all know the way the thing fell apart over the final week and a half of last season. So it's been the team's inability to finish that has hurt them, not the team's slow start. I think offensively last year, the Cubs came out of the gate flying, led by Javi Baez, until they went to Washington and he injured his foot. And from that point forward, he was up and down from an offensive standpoint until they had to shut him down at the end of the year. The pitching last year was an issue. Yu Darvish wasn't healthy to begin the year, and I've had long conversations with Darvish about this. He needed about the first 6 weeks of the season to recover from everything physically that took place, including the surgery at the end of the 2018 season. And then when he got it going, you saw him. He was dominant. He looked like the Yu Darvish of old during the second half of the season. The other big issue, if you want to just boil things down to big issues, the Cubs didn't have a closer for the first half of the season. Then they end up signing Craig Kimbrell. He shows up at the tail end of the first half, clearly wasn't ready physically, wasn't healthy physically during the second half of the season. So the Cubs didn't have a closer then either, and it ended up costing them the season.
Yeah, guys, I don't know how you are loving Joe Maddon, you know, through the first handful of years that he's here, and then hating everything and how he does things after he leaves. To me, you take what you get with Maddon. I loved having Joe Maddon here. I think, you know, the things we raved about back in 2015, 2016, you can't complain about them now in 2020 and say, oh, well, that's, you know, that was the Cubs' problem. I think Theo said it best, and I know we see this all the time in sports. Sometimes you just need a different voice. You can't have the same guy, you know, talking the same stuff over and over again. The players will naturally tune it out. So I think David Ross might get more out of him, certainly this year, than the Cubs got the last few years. But, you know, the team is still very talented. And I can't remember which one of you said it, but it's exactly right. The way they finished was the problem. It was not the overall play, right? They just got ice cold at the end of both of the last few seasons. And for that, I mean, it kind of looked natural that a change was going to happen. And it did happen.
I got to blame both Joe and the players on this. You got to change. After you win 2016, we all knew going into this, Joe was a very lax manager. Just kind of let players do their thing, you know, enjoy themselves. You had zoos, you had magic shows, you had all kinds of stuff. And then it just changed. And he still, though, was letting them be themselves. And you needed that change in there. And I don't think everybody accepted that. I think it was more so the players. We were just like, whatever, we're going to do our thing. And Joe let them. And you needed more because you needed that team to succeed. You couldn't just be the 90 wins, 85 wins. You had to go further. You had to push. You set a bar, and they didn't meet it after 2016. I'm sorry, you didn't meet that bar. So there was no change within that clubhouse to meet that bar. They just were like, hey, you know what? We won a World Series. We did it this way. We could do it again this way.
If I can, I would significantly disagree with you. I think following 2016, they ended up in the NLCS in 2017. There's no crime losing in the NLCS in 2017 to a team that's dominated the National League over the last decade in the Los Angeles Dodgers. I would say in 2018, it wasn't Joe Maddon that ended up signing Yu Darvish to the big contract, and clearly he wasn't healthy. It wasn't Joe Maddon that signed Tyler Chatwood and expected big things from him, and unfortunately he wasn't able to deliver in 2018. Those are huge factors. You know, they had the bullpen issue with Brandon Morrow in 2018, then Pedro Strop gets hurt late in the 2018 season, and then last year I think there were a lot of injuries in the early going, and this coincides with Chris Bryant being banged up in 2018, banged up in 2019, and you realize how important he is to the team. I think it's real easy to say Joe Maddon this, Joe Maddon that. The reason that the Cubs faltered over the last couple of seasons isn't just because of Joe Maddon. It was an organizational failure.
I'm not just blaming Joe Maddon, though. I'm putting it on the players as well. The players didn't step up. Injuries happen, Zach. They happen in all sports. You have to learn to adjust and thrive through it no matter what. And they didn't. They kind of were just floated there for a little while.
They made the playoffs in 2018.
They made a one-game playoff.
They made the playoffs in 2018.
They made a one-game playoff.
You just said, can they overcome injuries? They made the playoffs in 2018.
They set themselves a bar. They didn't meet the bar.
Next.
Oh, okay. It's a little too early for this, guys. Anyway, I have to agree. I think it's a little bit on both because, look, Joe Maddon, I think you had to realize that you needed to get more out of the players, but the players also need to realize that Joe Madden's not going to be the one to come out and say and bring the hammer down. David Ross might do that, and maybe that's what they need in the clubhouse. But, I mean, Zach, you're right. They still were in the playoffs. They still were having success. It's a little bit on both, and Joe Maddon's still one of the best managers in baseball. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that. They just maybe need a change. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a question we're going to ask management here today.
Casey Johnson reported on NBC Sports Chicago that the Bulls president, Michael Reinsdorf, used this All-Star weekend to continue to seek input from NBA confidants about finding, quote-unquote, an empowered presence in the Bulls front office to join John Paxson, but not necessarily replace him, suggesting changes surely are ahead. How much hope does that give you?
Gives everybody hope, doesn't it? The fact that Michael Reinsdorf sees what you've been seeing and wants to change things up. So I think you have a significant feeling of positivity and optimism after listening to that, that they're not going to try and do the same thing that they've done over the last few years to try and fix what's broken.
I'm not disagreeing with you. Not this morning. Not at 5:50. I think that this is fits with the narratives. It fits with a lot of things that we've been hearing, a lot of the reports out there, and certainly makes a lot of sense. Fresh eyes, strong voice, kind of new approach. Find somebody with experience. Don't go the gimmick route. Don't go the big name route just for the namesake. I think you have to really take a serious approach here to rebuilding, but tweaking what you have, because the talent, there's some talent there. You just need to get somebody over who puts you over the top, and that might be a free agent, it might be a trade, but you definitely, this does imply some sense of progress.
Absolutely. And the other part of this is, you know, a beefed up scouting department, an empowered presence. The empowered part is huge because I think Bulls fans, you heard them Friday. Was it Friday with Zach LaVine down at Navy Pier? You know, the whole fire Garpax thing. Fans have had enough. Fans are frustrated. I think the attendance is showing it. Certainly the on-court product is showing it. An empowered presence. And I am all for it. Do not go out and spend huge dollars on the biggest name out there unless it's somebody you think is going to do the job for you in flipping this thing around. Go for, you know, the successful up-and-comer from a great program, call it whatever you want, great franchise, and, you know, with that scout's eye, I think that's what the Bulls need.
And Espo, thousands of empty seats will speak louder than a handful of fans who were disgruntled at a ESPN daytime talk show.
Absolutely.
Does this give me any hope? No. Oh, no. I have zero hope for the Bulls.
Wow.
This gives me zero hope.
I thought Dustin was off today.
I'm here, and I'm telling you. I'm telling you, this gives me zero hope. Until I see actual change. We hear advisory role. Now we hear somebody to join John Paxson in the front office. I want him as far away from this organization as possible. I want Garpax. I want Garpax gone. I'm with the people.
Maybe you were at Navy Pier on Friday.
I'm with the people on
Chris
this.
Chris Dickens was out there picking.
I'm out
was
there.
Was that you with the mask?
I started it. I started the chant. I can't stand it. I can't. Look. This is 10 coaches. How many? According to him, this is what, second or third rebuild? More like five or six. This is a problem organizationally with them. It is time to gut and restart. That's it. Get everybody out. Bring all new faces in. I don't care who you bring in. Give me something different.
I think it gives me just a little bit of hope because it. I think it shows that they recognize change needs to be made, but they need more change than just bringing someone else in. Because John Paxson, I agree, needs to go, and at the very least, maybe shouldn't be involved in your player decision making or whatever, because it just isn't working. And they've fallen flat on their face for a decade, basically. And so it gives a little bit of hope that they're showing willingness to change and that change needs to be made. But it remains to be seen if anything's actually going to happen.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
Rob Manfred said in an ESPN interview that he believes Astros players have accepted responsibility for their cheating, but said he will work with the Astros to put this behind them and make sure other teams don't retaliate. How would you describe the tone of Manfred's interview? Was it lacking?
Somewhat tone deaf, if you ask me. I don't like the fact that he was a guy who leads one of the professional sports leagues, one of the major ones in America, and yet it sounded like he lacked the courage of his convictions. He did not want to set precedent. Well, what is he there for? Because this is unprecedented, what the Astros did. So I don't think that's something you wanted to hear from him. I think you wanted to hear him more concerned with whether or not his deterrent would serve as one rather than what was going to come next and how he was going to help them deal with this backlash and retaliation. He talked about the World Series trophy as a piece of metal.
Oh my goodness.
If you talk to a lot of people in the game, and Zach, you're around it every day during the Cubs season, it's a lot more than a piece of metal. And to me, it just seemed like it rang hollow.
What I'll never understand is how arguably the best quarterback in the history of the National Football League was suspended for 4 games of an NFL season, which is a huge chunk, for allegedly deflating footballs. And yet here you have the greatest cheating scandal in the history of Major League Baseball. Steroids was different because everyone was doing it and it was spread out and it's an individual thing and it was an assault on the record book. This is a cheating scandal, not a gambling scandal. This is a cheating scandal. And I just can't understand how the players who cheated aren't facing any discipline but bad PR. That's wrong.
Yeah, guys, I agree with you. I think the entire handling of this from the Astros as a franchise, from MLB as an organization, has been bad. Tone deaf is exactly the right phrase, David, that I think should be used with this. Just think about it. And I know Twitter didn't exist during the steroid era or during, you know, the baseball past cheating scandals or past whatever you want to call them scandals. I mean, there's players, current active players out on Twitter like, yeah, okay, I mean, you know, just totally calling out the league they play for as an organization. I mean, that is, it's such a bad look. The optics are terrible. The actual actions were terrible in terms of what they did to the game that you would think something else has to be done. But I mean, they're doubling down. Manfred basically saying that's that, right? I mean, I don't get it.
If Manfred's calling it a piece of metal, why don't you just take it away? If you're just sitting there saying this doesn't matter, why not take it away? To me, this whole situation felt like he was just trying to sweep it under the rug. Like, let's just get this out of the way. Let's move on. Oh, hey, guys, here's a new playoff system I want to try. Oh, hey, here's this. Oh, hey, here's that. Trying to be like, ooh, shiny toy. Everyone look at what I look. Look, just keep an eye away from the Astros. This was just more irritating than anything else with him coming out and saying, yeah, we did what we did and deal with it.
It really seemed like Manfred just doesn't get it. Like, he doesn't get that this is a big deal, and you can't just give him a slap on the wrist and walk away because they, like you guys are saying, they keep doubling down. They keep laughing in your face. They're like, hey, look, we basically got away with this. Okay, we'll take the money. Some guys got fired, whatever. We got our trophy and deal with it. He needs to come back and do something more because clearly what he did not work for them. It didn't change their attitude. And yeah, they're probably not going to cheat this year. Maybe they will, though. Maybe they have some other system. It's completely a complete lack of awareness for what happened here and how significant it was.
The only thing he said that really resonated was that the apology was not enough and it did not go well from the Astros.
It was not successful.
It was not successful, but the rest of it sounded like spin. That's the 5 at 5, 312-644-6767. Let us know what you think about the All-Star Game weekend. Chris Bryant's comments, Javi Baez's comments, the Casey Johnson report about the Bulls looking for an empowered presence in the front office, or maybe met Rob Manfred, the baseball commissioner's tone-deaf comments about the Astros cheating scandal, or if you just endured All-Star Weekend and you wondered, boy, Chicago really did that well, take a bow, everything went as good as it possibly could have gone, but did it detract from anything that Michael Jordan wasn't there last night? Where was MJ during all this? He was on the video screen, but not there in person. Did that take anything away from it for you, the basketball fan in Chicago? Zach Zaidman in for Mike Mulligan, 312-644-6767. Mullion Hall, call us, let us know what you think. Chicago Sports Radio, 670, The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.